following up that concept of self-government, could you talk a little bit about the significance of the proposed North American Union?
Well, the proposed North American Union is a good example of the opposite of self-government. It's being set up at the from the top down. You can't even be sure who's making the decisions as to what the structure of this thing may be. It's all being done through cooperation bureaucrats from Canada, the United States, and Mexico. What interests me about it is a direct attack both on the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence of the United States. The Declaration of Independence asserts the claim that the 13 original states were independent of Britain and became independent political entities. They then formed a union among themselves, first through the Articles of Confederation and then through the Constitution. But this didn't remove their original independence. In fact, the Declaration of Independence is the document that informs the Constitution fundamentally. The Constitution is a consequence of the Declaration of Independence. It's not something separate, independent, and unconnected. So if you're going to set up a North American Union, the first thing you have to ask is, well, who has the authority to do that? Who has the authority to change the national structure, to destroy the national structure of the United States and merge all of these 50 states into some new supranational entity along with Canada and Mexico? Well, it certainly isn't the Congress of the United States that has that authority. No authority there whatsoever. The President of the United States has no legislative authority at all. Although this one seems to think so because he's constantly putting out executive orders that appear to be of a legislative character. Obviously, the judiciary would have no authority to do that. They have to interpret the laws. They can't make the laws. So where do you find that? Well, I suppose you could find it if Congress were to bring Canada and Mexico into the United States. And there's a provision in the Constitution that allows for the absorption of other territories that want to join the United States. But that's not the plan. It's not to maintain the United States. It's to create this new entity. But if you go the next step beyond the Constitution, well, here are the 50 states. I suppose the 50 states individually could agree to rescind the Constitution and to rescind the Declaration of Independence and to join with Canada and Mexico in some kind of supranational entity. But that's not what's being proposed. What's being proposed, this is going to come upon us as the result of some blueprint that's being drawn up initially on the basis of trade agreements. And then fairly soon down the line, they will have to come up with some kind of legislative body to make laws and regulations for this entity. So to me, it's the ultimate example of the political class in this country simply spitting on the whole political structure that we have in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. To hell with you. We've got this wonderful pie-in-the-sky idea for world government. You're going to have it. That's the end of it. And the American people don't seem to be too worried about that. Now, I would just suggest that, well, we can live with Canada, I suppose. There aren't that many people in Canada. But what happens if you bring Mexico into this North American Union? Now, all of a sudden, our political power has been at least halved. And if you consider that Mexico and Canada might take a position contrary to the interests of the United States, we'd certainly be in the minority. I guess people don't realize that either. Now, how is it going to come along? That brings back to the money situation. This is another fascinating thing. If you go off into the financial press and internet, you find material on this new currency that's being touted, the Amero, which will be the currency for the North American Union. And I can see that being actually the lever for this structure to be put into place. You have the Federal Reserve System is collapsing more or less quickly, depending on the extent to which Mr. So you could go into an inflation, a really big inflationary situation in a short period of time. People are obviously not going to like that. They're not going to like eating out of garbage cans, as it were. you want a picture of what a big inflationary situation looks like, take a look at Argentina. They had two of these in the last 30 years. And Argentina is not any kind of a third world country. They just had very bad political leadership, economic leadership. So you have a massive inflation, and people now lose confidence completely in the Federal Reserve system. And along comes some kind of banking establishment which offers a new stable currency called the Amero. Get the Amero if we sign on to the North American Union. So they use the instability of the Federal Reserve System to drive the American people through economic fear, I guess would be the best way to put it, into the arms. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's actually in the works, because that's a nice way to do it. Because instead of having to convince people that this is legal or is politically desirable, they're going to be driven by fear of economic disaster into accepting.
Right. Yeah, that does seem like the easiest path.
Yeah, I think it would be. And you're going to see this, something like this happen anyway, because if the Federal Reserve System does implode and people do lose confidence in the Federal Reserve note, that's in that currency, typically what's happened in these events, especially in South America, they come up with a new currency.
Right.
Right? You've lost confidence in this green one, okay, we'll give you this blue one. And they lop off two or three zeros if inflation has become excessive. And then they go back, start at square one again. People are deceived because they've been given this new piece of paper. So it's a mechanism that has been used before in situations like this. Now, they have never used it to merge Argentina with Uruguay, for instance, to merge Brazil with Argentina. They just changed the currency over so as to maintain the political structure and the political ruling class and the financial ruling class. But here's a situation where they can get two birds with one stone. They can go through the currency changeover and use that as the basis for the political merger. And I just say to people, who look at this and say, you're making a mountain out of a molehill here. This plan has been in operation for a long, long time. This isn't something that George Bush thought up. In fact, I love to direct people to a book that was written in 1941 called A Plan for Permanent Peace by a man named Hans Haymann. He's a professor at Rutgers University. This is the middle of the war, World War II, excuse me. The first year of America's involvement in World War II. And it's a plan, or a synopsis, description of a plan for the organization of the entire world, for the creation of what we now hear called the New World Order, the globalist system. And he has some wonderful fold-out charts in this book, which give you the whole picture right there on a single page. And the world is broken up into three blocks. There's a Eurasian bloc, Europe and parts of Russia and so forth and so on, Middle East. Then there's a Western Hemispheric bloc, North and South America. And then there's an Asian bloc. And isn't it interesting that this is the same structure that Orwell uses in 1984?
Yeah.
Okay. And each of these blocs has its own central bank and its own labor organization, national labor organization, has all of these bureaucratic structures, and then, of course, they interact through a global central bank and a global labor organization. So there's the plan laid out. And he describes this as not something that's going to happen all at once from the top down, but first you're going to organize Europe, and then you're going to organize the Western Hemisphere, and then you're going to organize Asia. And, of course, at that time, 1941, even the Asian organization idea was not so visionary. That was the theory that the Japanese had behind their conquests. They were creating the Greater East Asia Co-Prosperity Sphere. So this is a plan. I don't think Hans Haymann wrote it up. I think that book was, a tip-off to people that this is what was coming, that the powers that be, or the powers behind the powers that be, however you want to put it, had decided on this globalist structure, and here's how they were going to accomplish it, by creating these three blocks and then merging the three blocks into some kind of supranational, or super block government. And we've seen it happening. Europe, the European Union, Now we're going to create the North American Union, which is the first step to the creation of the Western Hemispheric Union. And somewhere down the road, if they can ever get the Chinese on board, they're going to create a greater East Asia co-prosperity sphere. And then those three groups will be linked with a world central bank and so forth. So now, interesting thing about this book, besides the charts, and I mean, it's really prophetic. If you open up those charts today, you'd say the book was written yesterday. But it was written in 1941. The other interesting thing is he has a section dealing with capital mobility and labor mobility. He's saying, oh, how in the new world structure, you're going to have mobile capital. Capital won't be focused in one country or even one area. It's going to be absolutely free to move around. And he says the same thing about labor. The transfer of large numbers of people from country to country or even from block. And I thought to myself, this is crazy. When I first read it years ago, I stumbled on this in Wyden the Library in Harvard University years and years ago, decades ago. And when I first read it, I said, this is nonsense. The other thing I can understand, you know, you create these blocks and so forth of the people who are already there, but huge mobility of labor. Well, that's exactly what we're seeing. This was the plan long ago, and it's working itself out. Now, the illegal immigration thing in this country is another aspect of it. Oh, yeah, you know, you hear these stories that businessmen like to have illegal workers come in because the workers will work for less, etc. And I suppose to a certain extent that's true. But that's not the real reason for it. The real reason for it is that if you want to merge the United States, Canada, and Mexico, you have some legal and cultural problems. Canada and the United States, notwithstanding that Canada has a more socialistic system than we do, culturally they're very similar countries, even bringing in the Quebecois, right? Culturally they're very similar. Legally they're very similar, both based ultimately on the Anglo-American or British system of law. Mexico's a different story. Mexican legal system is extraordinarily different. I mean, Mexico's it's a narco-gangster government down there. They haven't had a legitimate government in Mexico since when Diaz. I mean, it's unbelievable. Culturally, they're radically different from most of America. So how do you convince people to merge two countries that have that are so disparate in law, in traditions, in culture? Well, you can do that by mixing them to begin with. Now, you're not going to have a lot of Americans go to Mexico, so you bring a lot of Mexicans to America. It's really easy. And because they want to come here. I mean, you have to subsidize me to go to Mexico. You have to pay me big money to go and live in Mexico. But you can find almost any Mexican that wants to come live in the United States. I think that's what this is all about. And that's why they're not closing the borders. It's not because lawn care companies want Mexican workers. Or construction companies want Mexican workers. It's because the people who are planning the North American Union want to see homogenization of culture as much as they can push it, so that when this merger occurs, they won't have a tremendous amount of resistance by people who say our cultures are so completely different we can't live together this way. So when people say to me, you're kind of paranoid, I say, well, I've got a reason to be. Look at the events.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the plan that's been laid out for 50 years or long. And Haman, that particular book, as I say, was written in 1941, when it wasn't even clear how the war was going to come out, at least if you were an average person looking at it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The United States had just suffered Pearl Harbor. The Japanese were running wild through the Pacific. The Germans were defeating the Russians. It wasn't clear who was going to win or when or what the terms of victory might be. And here's this fellow writing a book on the reorganization of the world. He didn't invent that. He was given all that information.
Right.
And it was a plan that was obviously in the works for a long, long time. Well, it goes back before the League of Nations or everything. The first way they tried to do this was top-down organizing. League of Nations, eventually United Nations type structure. And they realized that's not going to work. People are simply not going to accept some totally artificial global governmental structure. So we have to do it the other way around, as it were, from the bottom up. piecemeal. We'll amalgamate here and we'll amalgamate there, and then we'll put those big pieces together in an even bigger structure. It's like doing a jigsaw puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You start at the corners, right? You start at the border, where at least you have one part of the piece. You know where it has to fit. And then you work your way into the more complicated piece. Same structure here. And all of these elements fit perfectly. So that's what we're facing. And the question is, well, are the American people going to accept the consequence of this, which is they will lose control over their own destiny? That's what this is all about. It's the end of self-government for the American people, and government absolutely by other people. I mean, we have government by other people now to a certain extent, in that the political system does not really respond to what the American people actually want. But we still have the capability of taking back self-governmental control. Once this North American Union or anything like it has been set up, that capability will be gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that what people want? I can't believe it that anyone would sit down and say, oh, yes, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how this is going to work out, but I'm perfectly happy to have myself controlled by somebody else in which I have, in some process in which I have next to no say.